Hey, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what I hate?
I don't. I have no idea.
Well, obviously he said to glaive, which is another way to say betting. So in his real life, he was trying to gamble. So he owed somebody money to glaive.
The Princess Bride?
Exactly. We watched Kroll. Yeah, he says believe.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. But every time we say it. So, also here's one more dumb joke about the glaive, just to start off. Yeah, this movie might as well be called Professor Frank, you know, because it's glaiving.
Yeah.
Okay. Now the important work is done.
I like how we just lost all the listeners like in the first like 5 minutes. That's impressive.
Hey, one per minute.
Yeah.
So, John, this movie has 3 minutes and 40 seconds of opening credits.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of opening credits.
That's a lot of opening credits. Yeah. That's like just still shots with the credits going. The first movement on screen is at 3:40.
Wow.
So before we even talk about this movie, I just thesis statement.
Mm-hmm.
This is a 2-hour movie. I think there's an hour and a half really good movie in here because there is so much filler. I don't know if they needed to get to it. They spent the money. So they're putting it on the screen. But if you took out like most of that filler, get it to about an hour 30, man, this movie could cook.
It's a lot better. It feels like anytime you play a video game, like recently I've been playing Arkham Origins, the Batman game. It's part where you're fighting Bane and you have to do this thing where you beat him up enough. He does a move and you counter that move and you get on his back and then you tear off one of the things feeding him venom. And then you do that again. And then you go through that whole process again. Yeah. You're like, all right, I beat him. No, you got to do it one more time. It's that, like, one more time. This whole movie is just like, oh, you're just like, I got to do this again?
Yes.
Like, we're spending so much time on these things. It's just so unnecessarily long.
Yeah, it's long. I enjoyed it, but, like, man, it needs some editing. I wonder if there's a fan edit out there that kind of trims it down a little bit.
Yeah. I was trying to, like, give it the benefit of the doubt in terms of, like, yes, these are majestic locations, and this looks cool, and the idea of riding horses whose hooves are on fire are kind of neat, but man, I know you trained those horses to ride on, you know, to like ride on treadmills in front of green screen, or run on treadmills in front of green screens. That's got to take some time, so you want to get all the footage you can out of that. But even that 3 minutes of the, like, mountain flying through space and landing, the first minute was like, that's kind of cool that it's like, they're doing the Star Wars spaceship thing,
yeah.
But it's a solid rock that's... We're still doing this. Okay.
Yeah, it goes for a while. This movie has an MST3K quality when it opens. So we do the whole opening ball. So it cuts to, it's a narrator, and he's talking about, you know, the beast will come. He's taking over the whole universe, yada, yada. They cut to his army, and it's the most unenthusiastic arm waving of weapons.
Yeah.
You can see they're real tired. Yay. And it's so funny. If anybody ends up watching this after this episode, pay attention to the first time you see the dark army or whatever. They're
the
celebratory arm.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're the Slayers, though. That's why I said dark army, because they weren't dressed like the other Slayers. It looks like they were just... Oh, maybe they were.
No, they were. I mean, they have the same, like, the carapaces look the same.
Okay,
but
yeah.
But apparently,
I think
like,
maybe,
those designs, like... Well, like there was a lot of rewrites and stuff that happened during this movie. Like they're like, so the main actor, whose name is escaping me right now.
Michael Eddington.
Nope. But I like you got that reference from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. Well, that's who plays him.
Turncoat.
Yes.
Kenneth Marshall.
Oh, is that who it is, Javert?
Yeah. He looks like, you know, the artwork, not to keep talking about video games, but like the artwork that would come with like the Final Fantasy games where everyone's very like wispy and equiline and, I don't know. He looks like that style of drawing of Chris Pratt. He's very like pretty and in this movie, but he has this, like, Chris Pratt quality, but like much more delicate, which might be having just watched The Tomorrow War might be why I already didn't like
him. I was thinking he was Quaid adjacent.
He's Quaidish.
Yeah. He's got like a Dennis Quaidy kind of, especially back in there. Here's something. Let's just get my dehumanizing him out of the way. That guy is fucking cut for 1983.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Cause that's back during the, like, just kind of like Sean Connery was in shape back then, where you're just kind of like, you got some muscles under there somewhere.
He's got a dancer's build.
Yeah. But he's like fucking fit. Like he's got, you know, abs and shit, which was... Just, it's just weird to see that in a 1983 movie. You expect that, like, that's the 90s that starts to happen.
Well, and he did a bunch of his own stunts. And like, so that was kind of the point. Like, so he was, what I was getting at, this movie has some basis in like swashbucklers and stuff like that. And he did all this training for it. And then when it came time to film, the stalker armor or the Slayer armor wasn't what they thought it was going to be. And it's like, they couldn't move as much. And so they're like, oh, well, we'll just, cause it seems like a lot of times they're very stiff.
Yeah.
And moving around. And so like that might've been more interesting because they're most of the battles with them are pretty awkward.
Yes.
And it doesn't help that their weird alien noise sounds like Miss Piggy.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah. It's drawn from another movie. I forget which movie that is, but.
I watched this movie when I was a kid. I haven't seen it in a long ass time. I had forgotten that those things are like bugs or whatever. Yeah. So the first time that thing's head splits and like a weird goo bug falls, I was like,
rules.
Whoa. It was a fucking. Because here's the thing about Krull. Is this movie, they spent a lot of money on it.
Oh, yes.
And you can tell. Because like the costumes are beautiful. Like the locations are great. Like there's a lot of, like for 1983 is an ugly time for film. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of beautiful stuff in this movie.
Yeah, I would have watched an entire movie of just her, or the
Lisa,
yeah, in the castle, because that was so just like oh, the production,
the weird, like,
design of
Jodorowsky scenes,
because it's like it's kind of organic but like pearly and cold.
The first time the walls like kind of close in on her, and it's like this is a weird dream,
or that
sequence.
Weird like claw she's hanging out in, like that stuff was great.
Yeah, she was in an eyeball. Yeah, it's very Jodorowsky. I'm smart, I can make references like mm-hmm. that.
Which is, it's funny looking at the, speaking of directors, is the director of this movie, Peter Yates, is not someone I would ever have associated with a fantasy picture, and with good reason, because like he did one of my favorite crime movies, The Friends of Eddie Coyle, Breaking Away, the bicycling movie.
Stonecutters.
Yeah. A bunch of mystery and
he did
and
like
crime
a,
stuff.
I think he did like a Steve McQueen too.
Oh, he did Bullet. This is the director of Bullet. And it's, you'd be like, yeah, he's the guy, which is part of the reason he took this job. He's like, oh, this will be an interesting challenge. And apparently he hated it. And like at one point took like a 3-week vacation in the middle of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
it's I think the direction isn't great. you could tell there wasn't a strong hand because it seems like there's kind of, this is all over the place.
Yeah. And I think I have a lot of problems with the editing where so often like you can tell like they're cutting away because like they don't have the effect or maybe it didn't work or whatever. But it's cut in a way that you know that. Like, so there's one when they're fighting the white slayers at the end. There's a thing where like it looks like the thing's head is about to go. And then they cut at the last minute, and it just feels more awkward than if it's like, well, we stabbed him, and then you hear it happen off screen. Or like when the shapeshifter guy goes to kill one of the wizards, you see his talons come out, but then it just cuts to the guy being choked, and it felt like maybe there was going to be more of a defeat, it was going to stab in there or something.
But I know the story behind that.
It feels awkward.
That they were going to make a glove that had the nails coming out and do a practical effect, and they didn't get it done in time. So that glove later is in another horror movie a couple years later, Rick McCallum or somebody. No, that's the wrong name. Special effects guy. It doesn't matter. Uh-huh. He ends up using it in another movie, with a claw type thing. So you can see what that effect was supposed to be 2 years later. They just didn't get it done in time.
But it's like the way they cut around it was really clumsy.
There's also there's that. But then the other side of it is, you ever seen Samurai Cop?
Yeah.
So, you know that scene where their chief talks them down, and then they just stay on the chief for like 30 seconds, and the actor just kind of does whatever he can do, and you're like, this is really, really awkward.
Yeah.
There's like 30 of those in this movie they just stay. It's just, you just stare at it.
Well, at the very beginning when, so you get this background of the world, it's Freddie Jones, who is a British actor I've only seen in Dune as the Mentat Thufir-Hawat. He's David Lynch's Dune, but I know he's been in other stuff.
Who's Freddie Jones?
He's the old man in this.
Freddie Jones. Okay, got it. Yeah, yeah.
But he gives this, this speech about what's going on, this kind of prophecy, and it's done in this very, like, he's like, this was given for me to know, this, like, kind of, it's supposed to be fantasy language, but it's very awkward and clumsy, and I was already kind of like, my hackles were up a little bit. I'm like, this is not going to be good because that already sounds terrible. But it's basically that these two like different kingdoms are going to get married because this the princess of one and the prince of the other love each other. And there's a scene with the king and his daughter, and they're talking about her betrothed, the man that she loves. And this whole scene is happening. You're seeing him and his dad and their army, whatever. It's like riding up to the castle.
Yeah.
The other scene we just went away from. There wasn't like a motivated cut or anything like that. It just, it's like, why are you guys still talking? This scene's happening now. And then it comes back and it's like, did you guys just lose all the footage for that?
There's a fair amount of that. Yeah. I think that's just bad editing choice. It's like, there's a few times where they're like, oh, we're done here, show something else, then cut back to the scene that you thought you're done with.
Yeah, it was a weird stylistic choice. And again, like, I don't know how much of that was the director, how much was the editor. Usually the director has final say. Or maybe it was the studio, because that can happen too, as we saw with like Highlander 2.
I mean, the only thing I could think is that the studio said, we want this to come in at 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, I don't...
Make it move.
There's so much filler. Those horse things in the beginning were... I mean, I guess it looks nice if you like horses, but like, hey, look, now they're riding horses down a hill. Now they're going across a meadow. Now, like, this is...
You think that's bad? Mountain climbing. When he goes off on his adventure. Whew.
Okay, we'll talk about it out of order, because I have a lot to say about this mountain climbing thing. And by a lot, I mean one thing. You're a special effects wizard.
That would be a way I would describe myself.
You work for LucasArts.
Mm-hmm.
How did they film that? Because he's scaling a cliff.
Yeah.
It's a real cliff.
Yeah.
And there's no safety equipment. Could they, I'm going to say, because I don't know the word, rotoscope safety equipment out? Did they actually have their lead climb a fucking mountain?
There are ways to do that. Yeah. Even then, kind of badly, but there were a lot of things in this movie that seemed like chances were being taken. Because like when Freddie Jones was later, when he's in the widow of the web,
yeah,
in her lair, like they could not put safety equipment on him because you would see it. And so, you know, I don't know if it was his stuntman or something, or they just like, you know, flew up by helicopter, dropped him off, and like, we'll do a circle and pick you back up. You don't have to do this for very long.
Yeah.
Like Tom Cruise style. I don't know. Some of that practical stuff was, I mean, it's impressive, but what was so strange about that is, well, A, the amount of time spent on it, but also the way the music was going was this like triumphant thing.
Yeah.
But you had no real clear thing what he was doing, what he was at. Like, it seemed like he had already conquered what he was doing.
Well, he's going to get the glaive.
Yeah, but it's like, it wasn't that the journey was like this perilous thing. It was more like, he did it. He's on a journey.
Yeah.
This is the theme of like the conquering the journey.
Yeah, there's a lot of success fanfare.
Yeah, the soundtrack comes at you hard.
Yeah. But I can't get over it. There's one spot where he's climbing this sheer face, checking for handholds and climbing whatever. I'm like, it's 83. How did they? I'm like, oh my, they must. That's just, yeah, it was just very dangerous. And I was worried for him. I was very concerned.
Yeah. Well, particularly when you see how terrible some of the other effects are later, like you can see, and maybe this, you know, the HD and cleaning it up or whatever makes this worse. But like the scene where they're entering the rock wall and you can clearly see like where the seams are in the film, where they just overlaid.
Where did you watch it?
On my TV.
No, I mean, where did you get the file from? What service?
Oh, Amazon.
I watched.
Which, by the way, it was 420, and I was like, really?
I got it through YouTube. Uh-huh. $3.99, baby. And the special effects looked pretty good.
I mean, overall,
I wonder if you have. I wonder if Amazon's got a restored version. Because I mean, when I say look good, it looked like 83. Like there wasn't. It wasn't gussied up. So I wonder if.
Yeah.
I'm seeing the original shitty version.
No, I mean, like no, scenes. It's because it. I think that's a great way to put it. It does look like it, the time. Like I mean, this. It's not like a George Lucas remastered edition or something like that. Where it's you can tell they're in front of a green screen. But like I don't know if I'm just saying like in the non-high def or particularly like watching shit on video.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't see the, because it's like you can, it's not just the cave wall itself looks fine, but you can just see a line going through the forest. Except for, I was like, what is that? And then, so I don't know.
You know, so for effects wise, cause I think some of the effects actually look pretty damn good.
Yeah.
The floating emerald thing where they've got a floating emerald effect with an effect and he's got his hands on both sides of it. Uh-huh. So you can see a little bit of artifacting around his one hand.
Yeah.
But the fact that that's spliced in, because that's at least two or three shots composited and it looks pretty fucking good.
Yeah, it's at least good enough. Like I'm on board with it. Cause particularly that same like spinning emerald thing, when the beast's hand comes up and grabs it and shatters it.
Yeah.
That was like, it's hokey as hell, but man, it was awesome.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Because I've never seen that, you know.
There's a lot of awesome in this movie. So, all right. So, Colwyn, which is definitely a name,
mm-hmm.
is going to get married Lisa. And
and they're desperately in love, and you can tell that by the pleasant conversations they have.
Yes. It's not that they have no chemistry, but there's not a lot going on there between the two of them.
Well, there was also a bizarre choice to have her, the actress, is dubbed by a different actress.
Yes. A few people are. Robbie Coltrane's all dubbed. Yep. By the way, just out of nowhere, I'm watching this movie, so I haven't seen this since, you know, probably early 90s.
Uh-huh.
So well before his career. Fucking Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson's in it.
I had no idea that, because Liam Neeson wasn't Liam Neeson back then. Like, I didn't, when I watched this movie, he hadn't been in enough stuff that I knew he was. So, fucking, I'm like, is that like, there's no way, that guy looks exactly like fucking Liam Neeson. I had to look it up, like, holy shit, that's Hagrid. Like, there's a lot, like, fucking Charlie Bucket's teacher is Ergo the Magnificent. That's Charlie's teacher from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I'm like, he looked vaguely familiar, but he also just looks like a type of British guy.
This is true, but you probably know him from that. He's been in a bunch of other shit, but like,
David Batley.
Yeah. I was like, I recognize him from fucking Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I couldn't place which one. I'm like, was he the bad guy? No, he was somebody's dad or something. So I had to look it up, but yeah, he was his teacher, but yeah, there's a lot of good people. Anyway, yeah, there's weird dubbing, which is, odd choice.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad guys decide to break into the wedding. The Slayers. This is where you see the first Slayer explode, and it's neat. Why do they not just kill everybody? I'm not trying to dissect this movie, but just from a standpoint of ultimate evil thing, just walk around and stab everybody that's on the ground one more time. Why are you rushing your way out of that? Why did that prince survive? So, I mean, whatever.
They got to get to the castle before sunup. They don't got time to, you know, it's going to move.
I mean, you could just call them. Just be like, hey, meet me here.
Hey.
I'm sure they can control it. They
use the next tail.
Yeah, just, hey, we're going to show up 30 feet to the right tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
But, like, it's just a weird setup, and it's fine. You have to have him survive and have her get kidnapped.
Yeah.
But it's like, why not do it, like, outside the castle where, like, there's only one guy and they both stab each other and then he wakes up, you know, like, do it in a plausible way, not just like, oh, look, they're incredibly incompetent. They literally can't kill someone right. And their whole thing, their whole thing is killing people.
Or the hero is that good that he survives getting killed, that he's almost killable. He's nigh invulnerable.
Yeah. And there's some fucking fine swashbuckling in this part where he does the old chop a rope that's on a wall and swing.
Yes.
And let me tell you, very few of those blows landed, and it is obvious. Like, when he cuts the chandelier, and no one gets hit by it. Like, there's no one gets hit. Then he swings, and he, like, vaguely brushes by a stuntman.
I got really excited when the Slayers ride up, and which, by the way, I just love that they travel through space in a mountain, and then they're riding horses everywhere. I'm not being facetious. I love that as a concept. Yeah, yeah. They're like, well, yeah, we landed here, but let's just take horses. Let's take the horses. When the Slayers ride up to the wall and then go to climb up the wall, and it's just like dudes being dragged up a wall, and they're kind of moving their arms.
Yeah,
that's just like, all right, I know what I'm in for here, and I'm on board with this. That's the kind of awkward I like. It wasn't the awkward that I got.
Ymir.
Yeah,
the old guy. He shows up and fixes Corwin up. I'm going to say Corwin a lot, and I'm sorry for that. That's the lead character in Roger Zelazny's Nine Princes in Amber series.
Oh, it's also a guy I know.
Really?
Named Corwin, yeah.
Is he named after Roger Zelazny's Nine Princes in Amber series?
No, he's named after this movie. He's named after Krull.
Oh, that's weird, because that's not his name.
No, it's no one is named after Krull.
You'd be surprised. I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
I had a kid in 12th grade. His name Glaive.
He got thrown around a lot.
Yeah. I don't know how that works, because this movie came out after I was born, but, you know, whatever. I mean, no, this movie came out before I was born, because I'm young and cool.
I'm doing skateboard tricks right now.
Exactly. Watch me pop a kickflip. And old guy, Ymir, breaks down some knowledge. He's like, look, you young whippersnapper, the only way to defeat this guy is you need this ancient weapon, the Glaive. And that's it. There's not really a lot of convincing.
Yeah.
He doesn't say no. He doesn't deny the quest. There's no.
Yeah, they don't
do the whole Joseph Campbell thing. You're like, let's do it. Which actually, what I kind of like about this movie is, like, they get the Glaive before anything else. Normally, that should be the last thing before the bad guy. They, like, it's like 15 minutes later, he's just in a cave getting the Glaive.
Yeah.
Like, it's totally.
When he's climbing the mountain, there's those rocks at the beginning, but that's the only real peril. And then, you'd think it would be something that would, like, well, I have to get it to this location. Oh, no, it's at peril. Like, I might drop it. It's in danger of being stolen by the bad guys or something. Never comes up again. It's just the thing he gets at the beginning and he just hangs on to until the end.
It's interesting storytelling.
Is it?
It's more of
not a Deus Ex Machina, but it's like a little. It reminded me a little bit of the stupid Simpsons thing where it's like, oh, the code is the rhyme he told his daughter at the beginning.
Yeah. Well,
you know?
No, but every other movie would be like the Master Sword in Zelda, where like, hey, you got 22 hearts, you finally get the ultimate weapon that can kill Ganon.
Right.
This one is literally just like, it's dangerous out there. Don't go out there alone. Take this.
Take the glaive.
Yeah, take the glaive. It's like it's the wooden sword from Zelda. It happens right. So here's my problem with that scene though. So he climbs up the mountain. I'm scared for him. And he goes into this cave and he sees molten lava and he sees the glaive inside of the lava. He has a sword on him, right?
Yeah.
Now, a sword is a long metal object that is far more fire resistant than I'm going to say, my hand. Mm. Why not just fish the fucking thing out with the sword?
How do you grab with a sword?
You could at least try to like nudge it up to where you are.
You could do what?
Nudge.
Nudge?
Nudge. Yeah.
Nudge?
Nudge. Yeah.
Okay.
Nudge it. You could kind of work its way up. So maybe you only burn, I don't know, your fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
Or work it all the way up, flip the whole sword around, use the handle, wrap it around a little glaive. I'm just saying, I'm fine with him doing the heroic thing and plunging his hand in.
Right.
But at least give a hand wave to him not being a fucking moron. That his first thought is, hey, you know what I should do to get this? Is shove my hand in lava.
Yeah. Well, you know, when your lady love is in peril and the fate of the planet is in peril, you have to explain to them later, well, I was nudging. I'm sorry I didn't get here in time, and now you're married to a weird Dracula.
Okay, how about this? Why not do it with his left hand?
Yeah, well, that's, yeah. That technology hadn't been discovered yet.
Yeah, they haven't invented Sinister yet.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the glaive. Made famous by the end of Ready Player One when that one guy had it. I just did that to annoy you.
Yeah.
Everybody talks about how this is like this really cool prop.
Do they?
There's a lot of talk on the internet. This is apparently known for being this great prop. I think it's very stupid.
Yes.
The knives are 3 inches long, maybe.
Yeah.
And I'm not like an anatomist, but I'm pretty sure getting stabbed with a 3-inch knife, although very not good, very dangerous.
Depends where you get stabbed.
But for the most part, when you're thinking lethal killing force to stop a Dark Lord, you don't think something that Alex could probably survive if it hits 85% of my body. I think 85%, sure, that is a non-killing blow.
Well, it's like, it feeds back into that thing though, where he just gets the beginning and then it's kind of forgotten about. It seems so unimpressive when it shows up.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we've talked about this in the show before, but like Orson Welles was in some play he wrote or something where like, he played the character of Mr. Lee, and the whole first half of the play, everyone's like, oh, Mr. Lee, let's talk about Mr. Lee. And Mr. Lee is so fantastic and amazing or whatever. And so when he shows up, they're like, oh, it's the Mr. Lee finally is here. And the audience is like, this is amazing. This Mr. Lee guy, he's something else.
Yeah.
Whereas the glaive is, there's nothing around it. It's like, you need this weapon, the glaive. Oh, what is it? Well, you just need it. Oh, I got it. Okay, we'll just hold on to it and then it'll do something. Oh, I killed the guy. Oh, okay.
Here's another thing that doesn't pay off.
Could have been
a
gun. That would have been more interesting.
Yeah, I mean they have lace guns.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing they don't have personal shields, or that could explode into a nuclear explosion. Yeah. I'm referencing Dune, the book by Frank Herbert, soon to be a major motion picture.
You're gonna hear about it later, because I have complaints about that relate to Dune.
We'll get to it. The glaive. Also, when it pops out, that's putting the actor in danger, because there is very little space for those blades to pop out. And that's a practical prop. You see that shit pop out while an actor's holding it, or at least a guy's hand is holding it.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever that hand was in fucking danger for this dumbass prop. But yeah, people for some reason really like it, and I don't get it. The one thing I did enjoy, though, in my research for this film, because I researched, John, that's my commitment to the show.
Mm-hmm.
My commitment to the show is so deep that anybody listening right now should probably rate, review, subscribe on whatever their podcatcher is, share on Facebook, on Twitter, tell people, listen to the show. Because John and I have decided we're both terrible at marketing and this is the best we're doing. So it's on you guys. I'm talking to you. Yes, you, in your ears. So there was a video game made for this, a full cabinet video game. And there's one for the Atari. And it looks fucking awesome. You throw the glaive and it does like a boomerang motion back to you. And it, for fucking 1983, it is like the coolest fucking thing in the universe. It's like, oh, maybe they shouldn't have made the movie. They should have just been the video game like that.
Well, it got me thinking about like, there's a Turok game. I think it was like the second one for the Nintendo, Seeds of Destiny. I forget what it was called. But for the Nintendo 64, they had like this saw blade weapon. And it felt like, not Predator. Do you remember in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, there was this terrible movie called
We Come in Peace?
I Come in Peace. It's also got like, it's like Avenging Angel or something. It's got another weird title. But the guy had those weird like CDs that he was throwing at everybody.
I love that movie.
But yeah, and it felt like that. And it just felt so badass. And the movie does not do a good job of capturing
how that feels. It's like, I mean, it's essentially the modern equivalent would be Captain America's shield. Yeah. Although his is more like, you know, he can wang it off stuff rather control it with his mind. But it just, it doesn't feel that impressive when he's just waving his hand around later and it's
no.
kind of doing
well,
stuff.
We'll get to that.
It feels equivalent to like moving a mouse pointer.
We'll get to that. When we get to that, we'll get there. Cause I have issues. Yeah. The glaive, very stupid, really tiny. The next thing that happens here that I have a note is Lisa in the eyeball that we talked about earlier, where they just cut back to her in the castle, just like, oh, I'm in a surrealist nightmare.
Yeah. She's just having this, like this psychedelic freak out.
Yeah. This is what's so kind of frustrating about the movie, where it's like, there's so much cool shit in here. And then it's like, oh, wait, let's cut back to horses for 8 minutes.
Yeah.
That's why I want my hour. I wish in another universe that I knew how to do video editing, which frankly I could figure out because what I'm talking about is literally hitting a cut button.
Uh-huh.
That I had the energy and time, mostly energy. I have all the time in the world to make a fan edit of this and just make a nice, crisp, hour 35.
Yeah.
Like just fucking crawl the shit out of it. But you know,
yeah.
Yeah. Ain't gonna happen.
But that's a lot of this movie where sort of like it nudges against something, like being amazing.
I misspoke once for the love of fuck. Let it go. Fucking goyim.
Hazard. That it just like it brushes up against something that's like, oh, this is awesome or this could be awesome, and then it shows you how not awesome that is, or like you get the sense of what this movie could be, and it's not, and it makes it infinitely more frustrating. And if you're a child in the 80s, you're probably like, this is cool, but
so,
I don't know.
So he's got the glaive now, and their next step is they have to go find the blind Emerald Seer because he's gonna know where the moving castle is. Hayao Miyazaki style.
This is
which, by the way, Miyazaki owes fucking a lot of money to this movie.
Uh huh. Well, that was based on a book. Howl's Moving Castle
was the book before 1983.
It's no, so that guy, but not Miyazaki,
because that guy doesn't have any money.
That's well,
Yushiro Tajiri, who wrote Howl's Moving Castle. You know, here's the thing. I know there's like a 1 in 8 billion chance, but how sick would it be if I just guessed that guy's name?
That
like
would be
literally,
pretty cool.
I don't really know that many Japanese names. I just sort of said Japanese.
Well, I think it would be even more amazing because the guy who read it wasn't Japanese.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, that's very like that feels very kind of Japanese mythos. So that's
great. I've never seen the movie. I read the book, which I enjoyed. But
no, that's funny. Yeah, I've seen the movie. I like anyway. Yes.
But
those movies are great. You should probably be watching those.
This whole thing. It's just like it feels video gamey, and like it's just a series of like fetch quests, and it's always like the whole thing is always like, okay, our only hope is to do this, and then that goes wrong. Like, but there's another way, well, and we can do this.
What's
and
interesting then, about that though is because it's 1983, is video games actually seem crawly?
Sure. Well, okay.
Because the complexity of video games. Fetch quests weren't invented yet.
But I mean, I think that's my frame of reference, but I think that,
no, I know.
That's a common thing in like fantasy, you know. Like that's always just these series of little quests. But it was kind of frustrating because there were several times where it's like, we absolutely need this thing, otherwise we can't do it. Thing doesn't work out. Okay, there's another thing we can do. And it just like, oh, so then why did we spend a lot of time doing that thing?
Also, just small aside, it would be funny if in another universe, this is like the sequel to Lord of the Rings. He walked up the wrong mountain and finds the One Ring. It hasn't fully melted yet. Sticks his dumb hand in there. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is, it's.
The glaive, it is precious to me. Oh, look, there's writing on the side of this glaive.
Oh, yeah. Or someone just put it in the center of the glaive.
One glaive to find them. One glaive to bind them. And in the darkness, bind them.
Darkness weighing them.
Yes.
So, yeah. So they're going to see the blind seer. Are they already on the quest of the blind seer when the stupid magician shows up?
I'm going to say yes, only because I don't care.
Yeah.
So a firework shows up, lands in a lake, and it becomes an English comedic actor. Ergo the Magnificent. For I'm short in stature, but tall in blah, blah, blah. That dude's like 5'9".
Yeah, he's fine. Like
I think he's taller than the lead.
Compared to the Cyclops, he's small. But yeah, he's... Particularly when he befriends Titch or whatever, the kid later, it's like, you're not that small.
Yeah, but like he's like I think he's taller than the lead. Like they're like similar size at least. It's really strange, and it makes me think: did they write this script before they hired him and just didn't bother changing?
Yeah, it's like it was going to be the dude from Time Bandits, and they went, "No, that's fine." David Rapport, but like, so he shows up, and there's actually like, because he's referred to as like a hill person. Or is that like he just gets like lumped in like, oh, it's one of those guys.
Yeah.
Which is fine. You know, I like that kind of world building where sometimes where it's just like,
we don't need to delve into like their lore or everything about these people.
But he's just Shire.
It's one of these guys. But he has all these magic spells or whatever and recipes written out on pages, and he ends up inadvertently turning himself into a goose because he's very funny and tries to do it to someone else. And he's the comic relief for the movie, whatever. But those like morphing effects are pretty impressive for 1982.
Yeah, totally.
Like basically what they did was they'd have him shrink down, have a still of the goose basically, and then blow it up. And then kind of like morph those things together, kind of like do this dissolve between them, which essentially, if you do morphing like this is a super dated reference, but the Michael Jackson black and white video, that's essentially what you're doing. Like there's a tool in there's more than After Effects, but After Effects has a thing where it's basically you take two images, put these like points of conversion, and it like does this, it changes one into the other. And so it was this very early stage of that I think worked pretty well. And it kind of took me a second because you've seen it so much now, it's not that big of a deal, but you're like, oh, wow, that kind
of
worked.
Yeah, it's one of these movies where, because of its age, you could see this like, oh, this is low budget. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that you'd think that, but like because it's 83, everything kind of looks cheaper.
Right.
But then you like, if you stare at it, you're like, no, that's like cutting edge special effects. Yeah. Like that. Yeah.
And they built and the like 23 sets for this. Well, and spent a whole bunch of money.
Yeah. Apparently, this is one of the more what do you call it?
Costly.
Costly is not the word. It's the ratio between what you made, how much it cost to make, and how much you took in. It's one of the biggest money bads that's ever been money bad. Like, you know, sometimes you think about like Ishtar or whatever. It's like, oh, that's like a big money bad. This was like up there in the money bad.
Yeah.
Like if they made it for like 20 million, which in 1983, that's like all the money.
Mm-hmm.
I think it made like four. Like, I mean, it just took a shit.
Yeah.
But it's there's lots of money. They were saying that they rented out the entire 007 set at Pinewood,
mm-hmm.
which is the biggest location in Pinewood. And also like two of the other big studios there rented the Force, but had to do Force. Like they fucking hemorrhaged money on this.
Yeah. It was very ambitious. But you don't always feel that on this. Cause sometimes you can, with a movie, you can be like, I see what they're going for. This is impressive. And like some of the castle stuff the villain's lair, the evil mountain. It's like, it doesn't necessarily work, but you can see what they're going for. And it seems impressive. And I will give them credit for that. Particularly
El Topo Malo.
Yeah. Particularly when doing, all these physical effects, which, you know, almost killed the lead in a couple of spaces.
Are you saying that just, it looks like that? Or is there
there was one, I forget what the effect was, but it was something like these walls that slammed together, but he like narrowly escaped. Cause like, it was time, like, he'll deliver this line and then these things will close. And he took him, like, slightly too long to deliver the line. And, like, he just barely made it out.
Was it the one where he's getting pulled up from when they're in the...
It's the floor?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that looked weird. Like, something about that one, like, oh, that seems... Like, he looked scared or something. Something jumped out at me. Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. So we meet that guy. Shortly thereafter, we meet the robber gang with my note, holy shit, is that Liam Neeson?
Right.
And this is the kind of gathering our forces together sequence. And the robber gang is, you know, they're won over by his wit and his having the key to their manacles.
Yes.
it's a nice little sequence.
It's fine, but it's another thing where you have all these characters that you know nothing about. Like, you get these little whiffs, like with Liam Neeson, like, oh, he's got tons of wives everywhere.
Yeah.
But like Robbie Coltrane's character has like two lines and that's it. And like, I'm supposed to care about this guy.
Well, he's keeper of the keys.
Yeah. Hogwarts
reference.
I was just moving right past it. The Torquil, the leader of the band, played by Alan Armstrong, who just has like one of the best British faces.
Yeah.
If you want like a British bad guy, it's great. And he's actually, he's also a good actor. He's in Possum, this strange horror film made by Matthew Holness, who made Dark Place. Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Oh, yeah.
Which is it's very much not that.
Yeah.
It's a dark, dark movie, but he is really great and menacing in it. But he's been in a ton of stuff as bad British guy. And
yeah, he's got a great face. Yeah. Their whole gang is great. Like, it just feels like this is the best part of the 80s, where like this is like, even the 70s had this, where it's just like, just throw a gang of people together, you know, just character-y fucking people. But it's so crazy that fucking Robbie Coltrane and Liam Neeson are both there as nobodies. That's such a, I mean, it's not like they're like the biggest actors in the world, but like that is a That's a random fucking shot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this kind of enters into, I mean, there's a lot of this movie that's like this, but like, this is the part that dragged for me where the fetch quest stuff happens. So like, first they got to find Emerald guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cyclops joins up somewhere around here. But the Emerald guy sequence is pointless.
Ultimately, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they go to get this guy because the castle moves around because it's magical. And it'll just like appear in a different place.
Oh, based on Shingo Shizuri's.
What?
Nothing. I was doing a dumb callback Japanese
sorry,
name.
I get it now. Sorry, I'm slow. But they need to go find this. The old man is like, we got to go. My buddy knows how to track this down. So we'll go get my buddy. So they go to the Emerald Seer's house. And this is the moment I was talking about earlier where he's like looking into the Emerald to try to see where it is. And they can kind of figure it out. But then like the Beast, who's the big baddie of the, you know, the leader of the Evil Mountain, which the Evil Mountain looks great. Not just inside, but I just like the outsides of these rocks. But it's got these weird bulbous areas in there that look like tumors.
That center bulb kind of boob looking part is great because it's sort of technological. It's sort of organic. It's got like almost aliens vibe to it. Yeah,
it felt tangible and like, eagerly. But
the techno-organic about it.
So the
worst fucking impression I've ever done. Sorry, just please you talk. Don't listen to me. Just talk over everything I'm saying. Not this part though.
The Emerald thing. As they're trying to use it, then the Beast's hand like comes out of nowhere through magic and crushes it. And they're like, well, shit, we don't know where it is. But then,
well, fuck.
Yeah, but then he's like, well, no, there's another place we can go. It's in the swamp, and
he can go to the Emerald Tower, where the source of his power. And I feel like this is a Wizard of Oz reference that I'm not getting.
Well, just because Emerald's in there.
Yeah, like I feel like there's some kind of thing there, and whatever.
But so they go into the dangerous swamp, and they have a battle with the Seeker or the Slayers. I don't know why I keep wanting to call them Seekers. They have a battle with the Slayers, and nothing really happens. I mean, the swamp's like...
Oh, well, no, a changeling shows up.
Right.
Pretending to be the Emerald Guy, kills Emerald Guy, sort of off-screen, sort of not. And then very shortly thereafter, he's discovered, and nothing happens, and he's killed.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that effect when they kill him is great. Like, the weird, his face...
I have
bulbs.
That note.
Yeah.
Beautiful. A lot of the sound design of the death in this movie, I really enjoyed.
Yeah, because unlike the other Seekers, because I think part of the problem is that the Slayers, they all sound the same when they die. Like, if they didn't all just make the Miss Piggy noise, I wouldn't be that upset. But it's just constantly, it's like, imagine every Stormtrooper having the Wilhelm scream when they die. It just kind of got a little...
There is a Wilhelm scream in this movie.
Oh, was there?
Walking across when they're in the castle... One of the nameless robbers gets shot and falls off.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's a Wilhelm scream, but it's a Wilhelm scream. You know, right. Like it's in that exact thing. Uh-huh. Yeah, that high to low. It sounds exactly like that. I mean, I don't even know why I had to explain it. I mean, my impression was perfect.
It was perfect. But again, like, okay, this is we blew the seeing it through the Emerald thing. So we got to go to the Emerald Tower. Well, now our guy died, and I also just like how the shapeshifter kills the Emerald Seer. Dumps them in the grape nuts that's the swamp.
Yes.
And then, like, they figure out that it's bad because the Cyclops is hanging around and the swamp just, like, coughs him back up.
Yeah.
It's like, ugh, this guy tastes terrible.
Yeah, he's old as shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which that's not good meat.
I do like the through line of this movie of wizards being fucking annoying. Like, just magic users are just irritating people. And I love it.
I watched the show Merlin for a while. Because somebody convinced me to watch it.
Uh-huh.
And he's the most irritating character that's ever existed in the history of mankind. Mm-hmm. And I had this revelation of wizards are annoying, like for the most part.
Well, that's, I'm forgetting the actor now, but the guy that played Merlin in Excalibur, like his Merlin, it feels very much like a Flim Flam man.
Yeah.
And I always liked that. And that's kind of the same thing.
Totally right. Yeah, yeah. Excalibur, like back in the day one. Yeah.
And it's kind of the same thing here where, like, just the old man is kind of pedantic and irritating, but, like, also, like, I know this stuff, but I'm not going to tell you. And this the Seeker, like, speaks in these kind of riddles. But you also get the sense of, like, this guy just lives alone and looks at arcane books all day. Why would he know how to talk to human beings?
Yeah. And he's got a weird little kid that lives with him, which is sus.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Goose Hill people man, the comic relief, is dumb as hell.
yeah,
and annoying because he's a magic user. The wizards are bad. Don't be a wizard.
Yeah. Oh, no, you were stubborn, those assholes from Waverly Place.
Yeah.
What I did like, next scene, quicksand. Although, really dumb scene. Just, I miss quicksand. Those big, when we were kids, quicksand was quicksand everywhere. Was,
yeah. I mean, it can't kill you in real life, but I love it.
And then, and this is, I admit, like, as a big kind of strong man, we're both, you know, we're oiled up muscle guys. I cried a little bit when Menno died. I mean, Menno was my favorite. He had such personality, such you know, I know he could be a bit of a nudge, but he was my favorite of the band. Because the way that he, I'm pretty sure, didn't speak until he died was like,
well, it just sucks like he has as many lines as Artex from The Neverending Story. He dies in kind of the same way, but Artex gets all the credit.
Yeah, that's true. Well, here's the thing is Colwyn doesn't emote as much as Atreyu did.
That's true. I think that's it. Like, you don't feel it. They tried to like just be subtle about it, but
yeah.
Also, I like couldn't help it. The swamps looked like grape nuts, and so it was just cracking.
Yeah, really. Yeah, really. Not convincing. Yeah. Not of I am being very positive about some of the sets in this, but not the best one.
Yeah.
Here's something. So Cyclops guy finds the dead body of Mr. Emerald Man. Then they show him running through the set. Boy, that's got to be fucking tough from an actor perspective.
Well, yeah, because he's blind in that thing, and
you can see the slits where he can see through, but like they are fucking tiny. Yeah.
No, that actor, he Bernard Breslau, and yeah, he almost hurt himself much of the time. Like said, during the swamp scene, he and the actors had to help protect him from walking into the swamp.
Yeah,
because he was. Very, and you can kind of tell, like, there's a scene where he goes to shake.
I was about to bring it up. Yeah.
And you can kind of tell where he's like, there it is.
Yeah, he sort of missed it. Yeah. I was about to say the same thing. Impressive that he's running through a prop like that, and it looks pretty smooth. Like, nice effect, too. That eye, 483. I'm not saying it looks, you know, 100% real, but they built a prosthetic that blinked it. Pretty good for the time.
It also helps that, like, he's this pretty austere character so that he doesn't have to emote that much.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of a dead giveaway.
What's nice about him, too, is that he's this big cyclopean guy, but he's got a really nice speaking voice and he seems smart.
Yeah.
Which is, I think that kind of, like, kind of juxtaposition or whatever between the two keeps you off balance enough that you don't overthink.
I just like their mythos in this is that they traded one of their eyes to see the future, and the beast was like, "Yeah, you can see the future. Here's your own death. That's all you get to see."
Well,
what comes of that later is pretty stupid, though.
Okay, but I just gotta say that would mean that the beast is also a wizard and he's not annoying.
The beast pretty is kind smooth. Of annoying.
Yeah.
But he's not a human, so maybe that's the trick.
Maybe human he used to be annoying. Human and he got so ugly from using
from shit. Being annoying.
So they're like, "Oh no, our fetch quest didn't work. All right, I got one more idea."
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the Widow of the Web. And
this might be the only scene I really liked in this movie.
Really? You only liked I liked quite a few.
It's not that I disliked all of it, but like this, like if you were to ask me about like what's good about Krull, this is the first thing that would come to mind.
Yeah. So basically, there's a whole thing. They meet people. They get some food. Yinyur has to go and deal with the spider lady. And well, I mean, what am I saying, John? This is your favorite scene in any movie ever, as you just admitted.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us about it?
Citizen Kane of scenes in movies.
Which is weird, because you said you hate Citizen Kane, and it's a million times worse than Krull.
That's exactly what I said.
I remember when we did that episode of Citizen Kane.
Yeah, our classic that everyone downloaded.
Episode 57, Citizen Kane.
It was between The Crow and Boss Baby.
Yeah. Citizen Kane kind of looks like Boss Baby. Just sorry. That's the last of my thought there.
All right. Well, technically Boss Baby looks like Citizen Kane. But the Widow of the Web, they're like, "Oh, man, you can't go in there. She's going to kill you." Yinyur goes alone. His reasoning being like, my risk in this quest is no more, no less than anyone else's, so let me just go. And it's the scene where he it's this cave, and there's all these webs leading to one, this like orb in the middle, and he starts making his way on along one of the webs, and a giant spider comes out, a giant albino spider with like a see-through thorax or something with like, it's got red stuff in there.
I feel like thorax is the right word. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah. And I already hate spiders. So it probably didn't take much to impress me, but I thought the effects of that spider were really well done. And I think it was something that worked on Clash of the Titans. But it just really gave me the heebie-jeebies. And he eventually, there's this whole action scene, like just tense scene, not really action, but him getting there. Finally gets inside, and it's Francesca Annis, who played Lady Jessica in Dune, and she's the widow of the web, and she's this withered old crone. And the only reason he was able to get in because he knows her real name, which happens to be the name of the princess.
Well, they explain that in the beginning. It says when a young princess with a very old name, mm-hmm. blah blah blah. So it's part of the problem. Not that it matters, but like at least they bothered. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but I think that's part of why I like this scene. Is that it's this in a better movie? This I think would have been fleshed out more, but it's this parallel to their love that is barely told to us. You find out in their conversation that Yinyir and Lisa like know each other, and in fact they were together, they were in love, and he left for whatever reason. They had a son, and she killed it.
Yeah,
and that's why she's the Widow of the Web. It's like this is my curse. No real explanation beyond that, which is fine, and that. He eventually is like, she's like, you know, how can you ever forgive me for doing that? He's like, I already have. I can't forgive myself for doing it. And I think these are both like good actors. And they just, I think, bring these what little characters they actually have in the movie. I thought they really brought life to it in this moment and made it seem bigger than it was.
Yeah.
It made it seem like, oh, maybe there's some kind of parallel here between them and the young lovers, which they're really... isn't. There should have been, though, because it's just such a heartfelt scene. It's like when we were watching Knight's Tale and Mark Addy has that one line about going back to England. It's like, I've been gone 5 years. And you're like, there's a lot in that line that he just said. You don't know anything about it. And so she ends up telling him, oh, no, the castle's going to be over here. I'm also going to die now. And then you're going to die.
Wait, let's
get out of here.
Okay. So I'm going to read one little part of my notes here. They break a
hourglass.
Thank you. I was like time vase. Yep. Hourglass. Break an hourglass, which is great.
Piers Anthony's time vase.
Because, she's a spider and Black Widows have the little vase shape. Mm-hmm. And I went, that's awesome. How and ever. So she's going to die because the sand's running out.
The way the law of the web works,
okay.
Which I like that term, is that she can, if someone like names her name, she can turn that time, turn the clock over to like give the person some time so the spider doesn't attack. But also she can only do it once per whatever. I don't know. She says she can only do it once. And that like that the sand in that glass is her life.
Okay.
But it is somehow also his life.
That's the
because
part
like,
that,
yeah. So she breaks it. And I get the sense that like, okay, well, here's the amount of my life that I'm partitioning to you to get out of here. Which doesn't really make sense, but like, okay, fine. That like, I'm giving you this much of my power to get out of here. But as soon as this is done, you're done.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to take the rest here and just dump it on the ground because fuck it, I'm tired now. You forgave me, I'm good. And so that's the way I kind of took it, that it was basically just like power or, you know, life force.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. Also, what a coward on her part. You could have done that years ago. She could have just broken, like, I mean, oh no, I'd rather live as an old crone fucking spider keeper.
Well, there's a lot of, and I realize it's someone that's, you know, addicted to looking at their phone and getting mad at it all day, that a lot of these people, they're just kind of hanging out staring at stuff. Like the Emerald Seer is just like sitting there staring at a shaft of light. Well, he's blind, doesn't really matter. The witch of the web, the widow of the web is just sitting there. And then she hears someone who's like, what's that? But how many people go in there?
Yeah, it's true.
Which is another like, again, sort of like the editing pacing of this movie is when he's so close to he's already like dealt with the spider or like encountered the spider. It's coming. But now it's waylaid for a little bit. As he gets closer to the center, he sees, oh, what's this behind a web? A skeleton. Yeah, we already knew you were in danger, man. The giant fucking spider. Like someone else died here?
Bro,
crazy.
This has been very established to you. Like you just like your ex just basically killed you and herself to get you out of here. Stakes already
done.
All right. So he goes out, dies, because he's like, my story's done, which is fine. He's old as shit. Who cares? Turns out the only way to get to where the castle is, because it's like 1,000 leagues away, Rapidash.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. I have it in there. And I'm like, I wonder if John knows what Rapidash is. Because literally, it's just a Pokemon. They get on Pokemon.
Yep.
They to get there. For some reason, the Cyclops stays behind. I think probably presumably to stop Wolverine from cucking him with Jean Grey.
That's exactly why.
This is
the thing that's aggravating. So he's like, all right. And they spend a lot of time getting those horses, a really long amount of
time. Really? I didn't notice. Huh?
Yeah.
Next, you're going to tell me they show those horses running for an extreme amount of time.
Yeah. They spend a lot of time with these horses. But it's after they finally get them. And I did like that one point when the horse is dragging them, that you can see the lead actor's face. That like, oh, cool. It's not a huge stunt, but he did a stunt. And I mean, he did a bunch of stunts, but it was still nice to see that.
Oh, I don't think I noticed that. Yeah.
But... yeah, they finally get these horses, and the Cyclops is like, hey, I can see my own death. This is my time. And they're like, well, that's dumb. The Ergo is like, why doesn't he just leave? And the little kid the Emerald Seer's ward has come along with them, and he's like, no, if he leaves, it's going to cause him like great personal pain. That's all he says. Doesn't really mean, what does that mean? Does he get gout? Does he like get sad all the time, like Morrissey? Like, what does that mean? Doesn't matter. He's going to stay here and die anyway. And then later he doesn't, and nothing really bad happens to him. Other than, like, he dies somewhere else. But, like,
yeah.
There was no cost for him not dying
there. It was just a weird... Because also, he shows up without explanation. Like, he just goes, oh, look, he's on a horse now,
too.
Yeah,
I've been following you. I kind of knew this was going on.
Yeah, it's fine, whatever. Yeah. I don't mean to, like, dissect it. It was just...
It was dumb.
I don't really... Like, why bother having him stay behind? Just go, here's a more dramatic thing. I know my end. My end's coming soon. I have to fulfill it. That is, it's the way of the Cyclopes,
yeah.
You know, and then that, you know, like you'd have, you know, dramatic tension.
Right. Drama.
The Cyclops arrives on the Rapidash and saves the day by, and this is some really great filmmaking. He kind of like runs in front of them and they're like, follow him.
Yeah. Like,
okay,
yeah.
I guess they never would have thought of that.
Yeah. They storm this impenetrable fortress of the mountain, and they're just getting murdered. By people in the window shooting lasers at them. And then the Cyclops shows up and is like, hey, I can take like one or two laser hits. And everyone's like, yeah, just follow him. There's people shooting lasers from behind them too. But they're just like, oh, well.
Literally makes no sense.
Yeah. I don't, and they get in there. But then the entrance starts closing because the mountain's got to leave. And the Cyclops is holding it open for them. And they get through and they try to set him in the can. And he gets like squished. And it's pretty violent.
Yeah, it's pretty violent.
They spend a fair amount of time with it.
Yeah.
So you feel a bit bad, but same thing where it's like, well, okay, so leaving that other space cost him nothing. And yet it's another location where the Cyclops stays behind and then has to like just haul ass to reach them.
Yeah.
But what my favorite part of that is that so that the leader of the bandits has one of his axes and trying to hold it and it's not working. And then so he's giving up. They're trying to move on, but he's pressed by the gunfire. And so he's like, all right. And he does this flip, uses the axe, and he flips. And then he very awkwardly stands back up, collects his axe, and leaves. It's like, that gained you nothing.
And I quote, rolling dive with axe is very, very awkward.
Yeah. It's like, but again, it's things like if they cut it, if he's like rolled past now, like cut. And now it's like, okay, well, I got that he escaped. No, but they kept it where he's like, all right, I awkwardly kind of stand back up. Yeah. Maybe dust yourself
they
off.
They show every second of it. Also, so we did skip though, Robbie Coltrane. Is shot with lace gun fire.
Oh, yeah.
And this is where I have the note that good thing he wasn't wearing a personal shield or having a nuclear explosion.
Yeah.
That is from the book Dune by Frank Herbert. Soon to be a major motion picture by Denis Villeneuve.
And he earlier was like, there's nothing in this quest. We're going to die. And then he's like, yeah, turns out it was a pretty cool quest.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's worth it for the friends we made along the way.
Did you? Because we have no idea.
Yeah,
because we needed. You know what you did do, though, is spend 20 minutes catching horses. So that was worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, it is impressive, like I was saying earlier. So when the 20 minutes of them riding horses, there's a weird POV shot of like the horse like galloping and flame shooting up. You can tell it's like a machine doing it, but it was still kind of cool. And they trained horses to gallop on treadmills while green screen was going behind them.
Wow.
Yeah, which like rather than just using completely fake like barbershop horses.
Yeah.
So that's a neat effect. That's cool that you did that, but that's. That reaction, that like, huh, it's not worth the amount of time they spend on
it. Like that, the millions of dollars you spend on that.
If you were there and saw it in person, it might be kind of cool. Or if you know anything about horses, it's probably kind of cool. But I don't know. For your Joe Everyman horse knower.
Yeah. What did you want to talk about Dune? Have we gotten there yet?
No.
Okay. So next thing that happens is Liam Neeson dies.
Uh-huh.
And interesting note that in Kroll 2, the Slayer that kills Liam Neeson comes back with robot legs and then eventually takes over Mandalore. Uh-huh. You're welcome. I didn't say a Harry Potter joke earlier, and that's literally the reason I let myself do that. I've annoyed
I thought this was something like a Batman Begins thing, and then I couldn't remember what exactly this was, so I'm just gonna move on.
Yeah, no, that was a Star Wars Episode 1, the Phantom Menace joke.
Oh, right,
because then Darth Maul comes back later with robot legs.
So
well, first he comes back with spider legs,
uh-huh.
And then his brother comes and saves him and pulls him up from the depths of this garbage plant that he was living on.
What's his brother's name?
I wish I could remember. It's something real dumb too. It's like real bad. No, it's
Bob Maul.
No, oh, it's real bad. It's shit. It's like.
Darth Naughty.
Real mad. Like, his name is like, I'm really pissed off. Wait, wait. Darth Maul's brother. It's Sinisterus or something like that. Oh, Savage Opress.
Oh. Now, okay. Yeah. Here's the problem. Yeah. Is that there is a drag queen somewhere that desperately needs that name.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's played by Clancy Brown, and he's actually a really cool character.
Savage.
But the name is hilariously bad. Yeah.
Savage Opress.
Savage Opress. And it's spelled Savage. Yeah. Ash found a wild Opress. Go rapid, Ash. Okay. So there's me talking about Star Wars. Yeah, all right. So I've covered Harry Potter, Star Wars. I made a lot of Dune references. I feel like I'm done. I'm just going to not talk for the rest of the episode.
We did it.
The next note I have is the floor opening sequence we talked about earlier. Where the lead almost gets hurt.
Yeah.
And this is about where the magician starts to be useful for once and turns himself into a tiger.
A tiger, yeah. And then gets shot in the leg almost immediately.
Yeah. I think the dumbest thing that in the movie happens right now. They make their way to the center of the castle, and there's an expo center. There's a geodesic dome.
Well, this was the thing I like before we get too much into this, is that the beast tells the princess early on, it's like, you can roam a castle wherever you want to. That's what you're trapped here, but like, feel free to roam. But everywhere she turns, there's guards not letting her go places. And then like, they steer her into this like one area where then she's trapped.
Yeah.
And I just like that. That was needlessly cruel to do that to her, but you did it anyway. Like, hats off to you.
I kind of like the beast. He's an asshole.
Yeah.
So they get to the center. They get to the geodesic dome. Fucking Corvid. Crow. Mm-hmm. The crow. Brandon Lee throws the glaive. What kind of sachets?
He flings it.
Yeah. There's it's just like kind of like at it and starts spinning, and he just uses the force kind of thing. And they cut this like it's fucking comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it starts spinning to start cutting its way through the door. And then they cut back to another scene. I think it's the tiger shit. Then they cut back to it spinning, and you see it from the other side, where it's cutting literally a door shape, like a weird kind of spiky door kind of thing.
Yeah, rough outline.
And then they cut again, cut back, and then finally he gets in, and it's cut like it's fucking comedy. Like, it is, it's so...
This takes so long.
This is the point of, just let me edit this movie. Let me go back. I'll be 3 years old, but I'm sure I can figure it out. Let me edit this movie, because, boy, that's bad.
Also, like, again, for how wimpy the glaive seems... If you have something where people are like trying to smash at it and it doesn't work, but you toss the glaive and the glaive is just like, whoosh, oh my God, look at how powerful the glaive is.
Yeah.
But if you're like, no, this thing is like, you know how you might come at this with a drill and you can do it, but it's going to take a while. This is a power drill.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a little, it's going to take long, but not as long.
Yeah. It's like a Dremel.
Okay, cool. This is amazing. I mean, it's amazing. I cut my work day from 8 hours to 4 hours. But it's still 4 hours. I'm sitting watching this thing cut through a wall.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the idea, like, using that math, like, you could kill the beast with, like, two armies. You know, it's not that powerful. So he breaks through. Oh, yeah, this is the end fight scene.
Yeah, which I will say, we skipped over this, and this was something that kind of bummed me out a little bit. So when the beast has a scene with, and I'm sorry, I keep forgetting her name. Is it Lysa?
Lisa? Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
It has a scene with the princess where, you know, he's like, why, you know, you should marry me. This would rule, which I don't understand why that needs to happen. But like, he's got a code, I guess.
So here's the thing. There's a prophecy.
Oh, is that
about the child of that lady with the old name that her son is going to rule the universe?
Okay, see, because I that's a fair point, because I just took the prophecy as definitely involving both of those people.
I think I think that's his motivation.
All right, because he's like, we need to get married, and I like the way they treat the beast, where you don't really see him.
Yeah,
like even when you do, it's all like the lens distortions and stuff like that. But he's like, well, I can take any form, takes the form of Colwyn, and tries to convince her. This is early on when they're waiting for Ynir to talk to the Widow of the Web. And there's another woman that's like feeding them food along with one of Liam Neeson's wives.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
And he's like, no, I sent this lady there to kind of tempt him. And I'm going to show you through my casting that you're going to watch him cuck you, basically. And the woman like goes to kill, like seduce him. He turns her down. She goes to kill him, and like he stops her. But then she goes on about like, well, I can't really kill you. I can see how much you love the girl. So the beast kills her,
by just shoving her projection off to the side. Yeah. By just swiping left. And there's no indication about what happens to her in the real world at all. She just goes, move, dead, I guess. Because no one in the, like, you don't see it. You just see people reacting to it. And then they move on. But I was very curious what happened there. But my point is that, like, so the Beast is this, like, conscious entity that, you know, is giving this speech about how, like, love is fleeting, power is eternal, and all this stuff. But when it comes down to it, it's just a dragon. He's just fighting a dragon. It's just big monster. And it was not, I would have liked like a showdown between them or something, like some dialogue or something. Not that I wanted more of this movie, but just like, I wanted what was there of the movie to be more interesting.
Yeah, it's a weird ending. It turns into him just throwing the glaive at him a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And then he gets defeated. And there's this weird Luke can't lifting the won't lift the X-wing scene.
Yeah.
Where he's trying to get the glaive to come back out and it's not working. And it doesn't lead anywhere.
Well, yeah, it's like, why do you need this? This was I know that this is this part of this legend in your power. You have this medallion that represents it. No one in your family had it. It was in a fucking mountain.
Yeah.
It's fine where it is. Leave it alone.
Well, so he tries to get it out. And then the Beast turns out he's not dead. And it turns out it's the power of love.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, going back to previous conversation, is a curious thing.
It's a curious thing.
Yeah. It makes one.
And by that, I mean, it's a flamethrower.
Yes. Because then he gets with his wife. They finish their vows. And she lights her hand on fire so he can throw flames at.
Which was part of their initial vows, was that he puts out a candle. And she's like, well, in this puddle. And she's like, well, then I grab the fire from water. And her hand's just on fire. No, not a problem.
Totally, I mean, fair. It's another planet. Maybe that's the way it works there. Yeah. I don't know. I've never drank water on another planet.
But then he takes the fire from her hand and then can do a flamethrower. So does that mean any king can, like, turn his hand into a flamethrower? Or is it because of the prophecy?
I'd just say if there's a prophecy around, like if there happens to be a prophecy, I would just kind of just go. Yeah. Like basically, if you can find a prophecy, you can pretty much write anything off. Like, I can fly now because that prophecy.
It was prophesied.
Which, by the way, John, if you ever, I think it's pretty unlikely, but if you ever end up having kids, write some prophecies first.
Mm-hmm.
Like just toss off a few. I'll help you out. I'm pretty good.
Thank
writer.
You.
And write some prophecies and be like, by the time you're a man plus 7 years, you shall. And then we'll
can we go on a whole bunch of pointless quests first before I do that? Like, maybe I'll go try to buy some underwear and they're sold out. So then we have to go to a place that doesn't even sell underwear to meet a guy who knows someone who can help me get into Target.
Yeah. Cool. Of course. I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard in prophecies before, but basically you're saying like, hey, Alex, that like, hey, 1 + 1 = 2. Like you're basically describing the prophecy.
That's part
thing.
Of it. It's hey, I'd like to make an omelet. Can you help me break
like in eggs? In the prophecy version of Save the Cat, the first thing is underwear shopping.
Right.
So he shoots fire and it's stupid. And so the castle starts falling down around them.
Tends to happen.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's, held together by beast magic. Right? Mm-hmm. Who cares? He uses his fire hands to escape. And then we watch the castle disintegrate for somewhere around 21 minutes. Yeah. I mean, it is. And nothing. They're just sitting there, just watching it.
Well, it kind of felt like they hated that prop so much. Let's spend a lot of time destroying it.
You're probably right. And then he goes back to, and this is the disturbing thing. And their son shall rule the galaxy.
Yes.
But think about that. That means their son is going to be like a tyrannical dictator.
That's where I was going to talk about with Dune, where like when you find out in the second book where Paul Atreides is like, they even say like, you've killed more people than like Hitler and all this stuff, like that he's actually a giant monster. It's like, that's what your son is going to go do.
Yeah.
The galaxy seems fine where it is, but you guys are going to go now, but you're going to give birth to the Beast too.
Yeah. In the after credit sequence, they see their kid and he's putting a sand trout on his arm and going, I will take on the armor.
Yeah. That would be interesting. That's
boy, that's a deep cut Dune thing that just happened. Yeah. Hi, my name's Alex. I know a lot about Dune. I'm never going to have sex again.
Someone has to.
Other than Brian Herbert and that other guy.
Yeah.
And that's it. Their kid's going to be the new Beast.
Yeah.
It's
just like, there's so many like elements in here that are kind of interesting, but you can tell it feels like a lot of rewrites of stuff, a bunch of stuff just kind of crammed together.
And real bad editing. And I know I harped on about it, but like, man, it's the editing in the sucked.
You could have pared down a lot of stuff and it's still, I mean, like the problems it has, it would still have, but it'd be sprightlier and wouldn't wouldn't feel as painful.
I don't think I'd care about the problems as much if I was jumping to the next scene.
If you were moving along,
like, you can really just, that entire Emerald guy, not that I hated it, but like, considering this movie's 2 fucking hours long, just, you don't even need that since it does nothing to the plot.
Have the shapeshifter, when you get him, he's already been shapeshifted.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, just save some time there.
Yeah. And stop showing horses for like 8 minutes at a time. Yeah. Though it got me to reference Rapidash, so like I feel like
so we're all better for it.
I mean, I would think worse for it, really.
No, okay.
As much as I tell everybody out there, rate, review, share the show, like those important.
Then you
things.
Say things like Rapidash.
When you're sharing it, I'm talking to you right now, Cheryl. Cheryl, maybe there's somebody named Cheryl that's listening.
Mm-hmm.
When you're going to share on Facebook, and I want you to, I just wanted you to understand. The kind of prophecy that is happening is that you're making the world slightly worse by having more people listen to the show.
But tell everyone it's good.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You know, maybe everybody out there listening, could you say, hey, this, I know it's a weirdly named show, but this is like a really great true crime show. Cause that's the only thing people listen to is just pretend we're true crime and tell all your friends about it.
Yeah.
We solved the mystery of the glaive.
Of the Kroll.
The glaive killings.
The Kroll murders.
Yeah. I would recommend this movie in a very like, I think you understand what it is. If you're in the mood for like a weird 80s thing, like I think this is a totally fun movie. You can't watch it to watch a movie.
Yeah. It looks nice.
Feel free to like, if you've got to skip 10 seconds ahead thing, anytime you see a horse, just 20, 30 seconds ahead and you're not going to miss anything.
I would just say, don't watch it. I think there's some neat stuff in there. Like it's pretty, whatever, but it's just not worth it.
But how are you going to understand the end of Ready Player One?
That's true. If you're somehow very flummoxed by the end of Ready Player One,
because of the background of one of the scenes.
If you're able to survive one more day by not eating soap because you're that stupid, go ahead and watch this movie. But otherwise, don't bother.
John, I don't like you making fun of our dumb fucking idiot audience, all right? Maybe you dumb fucking idiots, but I love them.
I'm not saying...
Oh, I heard you.
I still love them. I'm just saying if you're stupid, watch this movie.
All right, yeah, fair enough. So, John, as we often do, we'll say recommendations.
Yes.
So we're going to recommend things. I am going to give an interesting one in that this is an anti-recommendation. I watched the show Loki.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the most part, Marvel is, as much as I defend them, they're sugar flakes. Like it's a hit, you know, and I don't think they've missed much. Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I think, was a miss, but it was fine. Like it was just like, ugh, whatever. It's a thing. It happened. Loki is a fucking mess. I really like Tom Hiddleston. Sophia DiMartino, I think that's her name, is the other co-lead. Is great. They have fire chemistry. But the show kind of sucks, which is annoying because they are like, I just want to watch them talk to each other. Like they are crackling with chemistry, but they don't talk to each other enough. And the show, it falls apart. I think it's my first don't watch of the Marvel. I would say maybe watch. There's two episodes in the center where they interact. Sophia DiMartino and Tom Hiddleston have a long interaction. I think it's episode 3 and episode 4. Just watch the scenes they talk to each other. And there's a great bit with Owen Wilson talking about a jet ski, which is really great because Owen Wilson talking about a jet ski, you're not going to get much better in the universe. But for the most part, it is a fucking mess. It's setting up something stupid. There's dumb time travel that doesn't make a lot of sense. And I know this is the recommendation section. I shouldn't be shitting at something. It's just, I feel like as the Marvel advocate on the show, I felt it was my due responsibility to report back to the audience. It's very unsatisfying. Yeah. It's the parts that are good are, there's great parts, but the overall product is, it just feels like it feels like this is a cog to get something else to move instead of this is something that needed to be made. Oh wait, one positive thing about Loki, even though there's some good stuff. There's one great thing. When they're on the Loki planet, it's classic Loki, alligator Loki, black Loki. That's actually Thor. There's a president Loki. It's fun. They do the shot, all of the Simpsons, you know, where they like cut through the house and you see this shit hidden in the floorboards. They do that same joke, but Frog Thor is there inside of a can trying to break it out. But they got Chris Hemsworth to do the grunts of Frog Thor.
Oh, that's very silly.
Which is so stupid. I'm like, oh, that's great.
No, it's like South Park hiring George Clooney to do the chicken, the turkey. Yeah. It's like, dumb, stupid stuff like that. I love it.
And the second you know it and listen, you're like, oh shit, that's totally Chris Hemsworth doing those stupid frog thumper noises. Funny. Yeah. Anyway, all right, so John, now that I've anti-recommended something, what do you recommend?
My recommendations, I've been really digging the Criterion Channel. It has been doing these neo-noir movies all month. Stuff like Cutter's Way, just absolutely grim movie, but it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And then on Netflix, Tim Robinson's I Think You Should Leave.
I've heard only good things about
that. I love that show. And the second season is, I like the first season better, but the second season is almost as strong, and it doesn't fall into the thing of like, because I don't know how popular it is. You see like some memes for it everywhere like that, but it got some notoriety. And it doesn't have a thing where like, I felt like when I started watching a little bit of the second season of Portlandia, it's like, guest stars!
Yeah.
And this is not. Bob Odenkirk appears in it in a bit, but like, if that's your big name, like that doesn't really, you know, he's in tons of Tim and Eric stuff still.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But I think it's still just as funny and doesn't fall into those trappings of like, well, this has got some success. Let's really milk this and make it seem like more fantastic. Or what am I trying to say here? Let's just make this and get more celebrities and try to like, and maybe water it down to get more people to watch it or something like that. It's very much like this guy or these people's senses of humor and nothing much has changed.
Yeah.
I think it's like it a lot more stuff just devolves into yelling this time around. But I still happen to think it's very, very funny. Oh, the other big name they got is the guy who does the voice of Aramaki in the original Ghost in the Shell anime.
Oh, he's, yeah. I mean, biggest name there is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy, we don't know his name. Yeah.
But I love that. Like I've already rewatched every episode, I think, three times.
Oh, nice.
Because I mean, it's easy to just put on or whatever. But and they're short, but he absolutely cracks me up because it's also just. It's just silly. Most of the time, it's not trying to make a larger point about anything. It's just incredibly silly. And it's nice to get away from stuff with that.
Well, you know, as I say with every time someone recommends a comedy to me, if ever my brain works well enough that I can enjoy comedy without it making me sad, I would love to watch that. Well,
there is one. It's funny because there's one particular sketch. I was talking to a friend about this the other night. That like, he's like, all I've seen is this one sketch and it made me feel bad. I'm like, yeah, I will skip that one. And it's not like, it's because some of it is kind of awkward humor, but I feel like it's not like Curb Your Enthusiasm where it's like, oh, if one person just said one thing, this would be fine. It's just ridiculous. But that one is just the twisted, it seems like it's one sketch and there's a twist that makes it very sad.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, which is supposed to be kind of funny, but whatever.
All right.
But you should watch that.
Yes. All right. So, John, for next episode, we have decided to do a bit of a theme of weird 80s movies John hasn't seen yet. So, John, since you're the one that's John, what weird 80s movie have you not seen?
I have not seen Flash Gordon.
No, you've seen Flesh Gordon, though.
I've seen Flesh Gordon and Flesh Gordon, too.
Yeah.
But not...
The Thickening.
Yeah. Not the Griffening.
God damn, I'm happy about that joke. Yes. So we are going to be watching Flash Gordon, which is... Man, I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember it being super fun. It's got a Queen soundtrack. Brian Blessed, who I adore, puts in the most over-the-top performance as a bird person.
Is it Christopher Lee or Max von Sydow is Ming the Merciless?
It's one of those guys. I think it's Max von Sydow.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Timothy Dalton's in it.
You know, I think you're right.
No,
Timothy Dalton is in it. Yeah. I just remember Brian Blessed and that guy that didn't do anything that played Flash.
Yeah, I was going to say, none of these other people are Flash Gordon, but
I remember being really fun. So I'm looking forward to being disappointed by my childhood memories.
Oh, I bet it's fun.
Yeah.
We'll see.
All right. So do that. Follow us on Twitter at JawsPod, Facebook, John and Alex Hay Stuff. And, you know, I've already said it like six times and stuff, but like, for the love of God, just share the show. Just share it. Put it on your timeline. Be like, hey, look, here is a thing I like. Here's a delicate egg of creativity.
Send it to your enemies. Like, just anything.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. Like, send it to people you hate because they probably,
be like, hey, just... I think this is a show you'll like. And then they'll listen to it. I'm like, what are they trying to say here? I better listen to more episodes to see if they're making fun of me or not.
Yeah. Also, and if you're too shy to share the show, here's what you can also do. Just download each episode like 50, 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
So at least I can feel better about what I'm doing. Because like, I'm not saying we need to be popular. I'm just saying like, just let's get those numbers up a little bit so I can feel less embarrassed.
Give me the illusion that someone loves me.
Yeah. Because at this point, it's one of those like, are we doing something wrong? Because I feel like we're, but I mean, I've listened to other podcasts. I assure you, we're doing
the same things wrong, but somehow our wrong isn't catching on.
Yeah. It's confusing. Anyway. So
the listener's fault somehow.
I've been Paul Shearer. That's been June. Diane Raphael. I'm also Jason Manzoukas. What's up, hot dog? Also,
check out the Patreon. We got some bonus episodes on there. We got another one coming up here. Another little bonus fun thing coming up pretty soon. And then you can also download and read Alex's books and short stories.
Yes, do that. On Amazon.com, Alex Bolen, Alex Bolen, two X's, B-O-L-L-E-N. You can get my books. If you are a broke-ass motherfucker, if you prove that you have shared this show, I will send you a free PDF of any book I've written. Screenshot that shit. Don't delete it immediately afterwards, though, because I know that's what I would do, but don't do that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Actually read it.
All right. Yeah. You don't have to read it. Just share the show, and then I'll send you the thing. Anyway, all right. I love everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.